Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. I'm opening the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee on Thursday, April 30th, 2015. Thank you all for being here. We have the pleasure today of having an informational hearing talking about the carbon policy in Quebec, Canada, with Minister David Herault, who is the, and you have quite a title, the Minister of Sustainable Development, Environment, and the Fight Against Climate Change. We are so pleased to have you here today. So I'm going to go ahead and open the informational meeting. And I know that you are here to share your experience, and so we're glad that even though you weren't able to make it here when we had the climate discussion, you made time for us in your schedule today when you were in town. So welcome.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much. It's an honor and privilege to be addressing the members of the committee today. Quebec's economy is, just to put you in context, is a bit similar to Oregon's, actually. I think we have a lot in common. And so I think it's very productive to be able to have these discussions on climate change and ways to fight its impacts. We're about 8 million people. We have a very diversified economy. We have a GDP of about $340 billion. And as you probably know, last year we linked our carbon market, which had been established in 2013, to California's through our membership in the Western Climate Initiative. And so we created with California the largest carbon market in North America. And I'm happy to report that we've had two very successful credit auctions, one last November and one just here this year in February. And both auctions showed, gave us a lot of concrete results and showed us that the system really works. First of all the carbon credits were sold at or above the base price that was set before each auction. And this shows that the private sector has truly engaged in this system and has faith in it. And also, we have seen that the actual value of the credit per ton is actually growing. Originally, when we had our own specific market.
Excuse me, Minister Herault.
Yes.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. We're going to have to stand at ease. I just heard they're going to need us to come up for a vote. And we are back in action. Thank you. So sorry for that interruption. Please continue.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as I was saying, we have linked our carbon market to California's. And over the last 6 months, we've had two auctions. They were very successful, and which shows that the system does work. And now we have proof of concept, so to speak. The other big news coming off this is that last April 13th, the government of Ontario announced their intention to join the carbon market we have with Quebec and California. So now you have Canada's two largest economies representing 54% of Canada's economy and 62% of Canada's population, which will now be working under the same carbon market system linked to California's. And so working under the confines of the Western Climate Initiative, which Oregon is still a member. So there is a great momentum right now on this issue, because I think now we've seen the concrete results of this system. And while everybody agrees that there needs to be action on climate change, and we've seen what Oregon has been doing, the bills that are being considered right now, so you've been very proactive, and we salute what your legislature is doing on these issues and looking at ways to act, because we all know that we are almost behind schedule in terms of fighting climate change effectively. We're in an emergency situation, and so the impacts on health are measurable now. We know that there's a direct link between the pollution that is being caused by GHG emissions and respiratory disease and other types of health problems. We know also from Quebec's experience, we have major problems with coastal erosion. Most of Quebec's population lives near or very near the St. Lawrence River. And we feel the impacts through coastal erosion, the changing, the impacts on drinking water, on fresh water, more flooding also, and the impact on infrastructure, which is already costing us a lot financially, and the projections show that there will be dire consequences if nothing is done. And so we could go on, but the thing is that we clearly are in front of a conclusion where the cost of doing nothing will are outweighing greatly any type of investment we do now on the issue of climate change. And that's why Quebec has decided to act and setting up the carbon market. And like I said, the earlier, maybe I alluded to the fact also that the one of the great advantages of the system is that not only does it set up a system where there are actually hard caps, there are limits set on emissions. And these ceilings actually go down year after year after year, so you're actually you're able to measure through effective reporting systems that you can track the reductions. And so that's why our targets for between 2006 and 2012 were to reduce our emissions by 6% compared to 1990 levels. And we not only achieved that goal, but we surpassed it, and we reduced by 8%. Through our efforts in limiting and reducing emissions. And our goal now for 2020 is to reach 20% reduction compared to 1990 levels. And we're confident that the carbon market system we have set up and linked now with California, and now we will now link with Ontario, will help us achieve those goals. But the other interesting piece that is linked to such a system is the fact that it generates revenues. Now, the carbon market, we estimate, will help us raise about $3.3 billion between now and 2020. And that money, by law, must be reinvested in the Quebec economy in different measures to help us achieve the transition towards an economy that is less dependent on fossil fuels. So we will be investing this money in public transit, in electrification of transportation, in energy efficiency measures, in research, in clean tech development, to make sure that also we will be able to transform our economy and have a strategic way of setting up Quebec's economy for the 21st century. Which means that it's an economy that is less reliant on fossil fuels, but rather being able to develop high-paying jobs in industries that are in growth mode, and not only help us develop technologies to limit emissions and reduce them, but also create technologies that can be exported. And that's another key component of this strategy, is that we're in a position right now where the world is setting up different strategies, but the players that are going to be first in setting these strategies up and actually being first also to develop these new industries, develop these new technologies, will not only help their populations, but also be able to thrive economically through exporting the what they've been developing. And we're seeing it right now. We have companies that have developed, for example, an electric school bus. People always say, well, school bus, but when you think about it, school buses run on diesel, and like one school bus will consume over 8,000 liters of I'm sorry, I can't convert it right away in gallons, but over 8,000 liters of diesel a year. And you multiply that, like in Quebec, we have between 6 and 8,000 school buses. If you multiply it just in Oregon, if there are plenty of school buses everywhere. School buses. Everybody has school buses. Well, this has a significant impact. So this bus was entirely developed in Quebec by a local company. And now they're not only are the local school boards testing it out, but now other jurisdictions, namely California, are looking at this bus and seeing if it's right for them. So you're seeing this completely new business, new technology being developed, and now there's the potential for exports. Same thing for methane, dealing with methane. There's a company that has developed a new way to deal with methane, which is 25 times more harmful than CO2 and methane in coal plants. And there's a protocol within our carbon market with California to deal specifically with methane generated by coal mining. And this new technology, brand new technology, was developed as this Quebec company. And this company was able not to sell it on the U.S. market and actually generate extra revenue from the offset credits that were available, that were generated by the selling of this technology to a U.S. company that was being traded on the carbon market. So you're seeing also the what was before the theory behind the carbon market work, which is incentivizing private industry, the private sector, in finding more efficient ways of reducing emissions. A lot of times people were talking, well, we should take the regulatory approach, but we've seen the regulatory approach have its problems. And so with the carbon market, you have a way of incentivizing the private sector and finding itself ways to sort itself out and develop new technologies and find the economic benefit of developing these new technologies. And at the same time, this generates jobs, high-paying jobs, in the Quebec economy. And same thing for California. And again, I think this is why Ontario chose also to go ahead and join, because not only is it an effective way of reducing emissions, but it's also a great way to develop a modern economy, which relies much less on fossil fuels. And Madam Chair, if I may just end on this, because I know we'll have the time to, I want us to have the time to exchange on this. But there's also the, I would like the members of the committee to consider the international movement that is, especially at the subnational level or infranational level. The provinces, states, cities are making a real difference in the fight against climate change. And we're seeing it in Canada. If you add what British Columbia is doing with their carbon tax, you now have 75% of Canadians now living under a system which has some form of carbon pricing. And that was done through the provinces. In the U.S., there's California, but obviously what Oregon and Washington State are doing with California and with BC through the Pacific Coast Collaborative. You have the RGGI states back east, 9 U.S. states together, again, with a carbon market system already set up through President Obama's Climate Action Plan, the new EPA regulations, which actually could favor the setting up of market mechanisms by the states. You're seeing a movement towards carbon pricing. And I know some people will say, well, smaller economies like Quebec's or Oregon's, well, how can it truly make a difference? Well, by coming together and working together and harmonizing ways of fighting climate change, not only have we found that it works in developing our economies, but also it makes a real difference internationally. Premier Couillard of Quebec organized earlier this month the first ever summit on climate change in all of Canadian history. And all the premiers of the provinces and territories were there and agreed to work together collaboratively looking towards Paris and the major UN conference, which will occur this December in Paris. And it was so impressive to see that all these provinces and territories, which have very different economies, and some of them rely much more on the fossil fuel industry than others. For example, Quebec's 90% of Quebec's energy comes from renewable sources. We're based on hydroelectricity. But even provinces that are not so fortunate, everybody agreed that we should work together and we can affect change, and we must affect change by working together, and that a carbon pricing strategy is a cornerstone of that strategy. And so at that summit, UN Secretary Cristiana Figueres, who's responsible for the organization of this major conference in Paris, said that she was going to make sure that the subnational governments like California, like Oregon, like Quebec, like Ontario would have a day during the COP in Paris. And the French government also said the same. French President Hollande has committed himself to making sure that the subnational governments would be heard. And I think that's important also to emphasize, is that together, when we come together, we have a voice. And we have the types of jurisdictions, Oregon, Quebec, it's at the provincial and state level that the real jurisdictions to affect change exist. So what I'm doing here today is to share that experience and hope we can continue the work. I met with Governor Brown earlier today. We've worked with the state through WCI, through different international conferences. And our wish is to continue the work and hopefully find ways to align ourselves in this very important fight, not only for us, but for generations to come. So again, Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Questions for the Minister?
I have one. Thank you, Madam Chair. Minister Hertel, does that fund, the Green Fund, does it pay for research for any kind of renewables, or is there a list or a specific devices or things like that?
Well, we evaluate through the Green Fund. We evaluate, so it's not limited. So it's open. We're looking at research, first of all, on the impacts of climate change. Like, for example, what I told you about coastal erosion and what's going on there, it was through research funded by the Green Fund. But also we're looking in research regarding electrification of transportation, research in different technologies. We're considering even hydrogen-based vehicles. We're thinking about maybe looking at researching that further. So there's no limit, actually, because you can't really. The worst thing I think government can do is dictate where research could go. I think what we're there to do is support research and to find the best ways mm-hmm. for us to fight climate change. And so we're supporting that. One of the things we did is create a consortium of different universities and different scientists that we're funding in different fields to help us not only on the technology side but also on the impact side.
Okay. Thank you.
Very simple question. I apologize for the strange schedule today, and so thank you for being here. It's a really simple question. I should know the answer to, but we're talking about a lot of money flowing into a fund and all this great spending for research and exciting things that's going on, but could you just make it real simple terms? Where's the money come from?
Okay. So the way a carbon market works, and I'll try to make it as simple as possible. Okay. So what we're saying is that we start from the fact that we need to reduce emissions. So how do we start? It actually begins with reporting. What we're saying is that the largest emitters of greenhouse gas emissions have to report their yearly emissions. And through that reporting, we can set the famous cap from the cap and trade, right? So the cap is set, and it's set at 25,000 tons of CO2. So if you're an industry, a business, and you emit more than 25,000 tons of CO2, each ton above that cap, you have to buy credits. Okay, so to be able to operate by law, you're going to have to buy credits. And you trade that credit to be allowed to go over that cap. So those credits, how do you buy the credits? So you're a business and you want to buy a credit. What happens is that there are auctions, and there are four auctions per year. So we're at our second auction right now. We've had two with California, but previously the year before in 2013 and early 2014, we'd had four auctions, but just for the Quebec market. And those auctions, we actually, it's the government that auctions off those credits. So businesses, so there's a certain number of credits made available at each auction. And then businesses register to buy. And so they bid on credits, and they have to buy them. So that's how government gets money. And then that money is then reinvested, in Quebec's case, in the Green Fund. And then we do with the Green Fund what I explained earlier. The companies now have this credit for a ton of CO2. And that becomes sort of like a commodity. It can be traded on the open market. So the incentive there is that, obviously, if you're a company, you want to maybe change the way you're doing business so you don't have to buy so many credits every year to respect the law. But also, if you're doing well, let's say you've actually hit your reduction targets, well, the credits you don't need, you can actually sell on the open markets to companies who will need it. And what we've seen is that not only is that starting to happen, but through the last 2 years, the value of the credit has gone up. When we started the market, credit was about $10 to $11 a ton, and now we're at over $12 a ton. So there's another economic incentive for performing well, so for either changing your technology or using fuels that are less harmful to the environment, what you're doing is you have an economic incentive, because then you can trade, you can sell on the open market your credits and make money. I hope that clarifies.
It's less unclear.
Okay,
Representative Holby.
Yeah, I'm following along that line. How I guess, what has been the experience of the companies that have to purchase these credits and being able to absorb that cost and then pass that on, I assume, to consumers?
Well, some sectors have not. Like, for example, in Quebec, we have a very important aluminum sector. And so that aluminum is basically, the price of aluminum is basically set on an international market scale. So consumers have not necessarily felt, you know, I don't think their aluminum siding has necessarily gone up because of the cap and trade system. So in other cases, for example, the fossil fuel distributors and the oil companies have decided to pass on the cost to the consumer. So it has meant in Quebec a hike at the pump of 2 to 3 cents a liter. Now, obviously, that has not gone unnoticed, but at the same time, I think people understand, and they still favor, and most recent polling in Quebec shows that people are still strongly support climate change action and strongly support what the government is doing. And so they understand, and we all understand that, again, that's the cost of fighting climate change, and we need to do this. Again, like I said earlier, we have to tackle the effects on health, on our infrastructure, on coastal erosion, on the constant flooding, on the extremes, the temperature extremes. We've never had so many horribly cold days these last few winters, just like we haven't had so many very, very hot days. So this is affecting our elderly. It's affecting the very young. So we're seeing all of these impacts, and the people clearly understand that these measures need to be taken. And again, I go back to the fact that the other piece of this strategy is that we're reinvesting all this money in our economy to create jobs and create new businesses.
Madam Chair, follow up with that. Yeah, I appreciate that answer, and you know, can see how it has that ripple effect in the economy. But I guess my question is, how do you mitigate, or do you, I guess, the impacts to those businesses that aren't able to pass those additional costs on to the consumer, who are constrained by international, you know, commodity markets or whatever. I mean, I assume that over time, if the whole world was doing that, they would be able to absorb those costs. But in the interim, they're not able to pass those costs on. So is there a mechanism set up to provide them some relief?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Actually, yes, we were very sensitive to that issue because, again, especially smaller businesses were feeling that there is some pain in establishing the mechanisms to transition out of the older ways of doing business. And so, for example, last December, we announced an investment package of $350 million, and all that money came from the Green Fund. So $350 million for 13 different measures to help smaller businesses transition. So it could go for energy efficiency programs, help them develop new technologies. So there was different measures to specifically help businesses cope with that transition, and so they weren't feeling the brunt of the impacts, because there are impacts. But that's why there's the Green Fund gives you that maneuverability. The revenues from the system can be also invested to help companies transition without hurting their competitiveness. And also another factor is that within the market, and I know it's very complex, but within the market, the carbon market system, there are safeguards. There's for different types of industries, each company will receive free credits. So they don't have to buy all the credits that are needed. So throughout the life of the system, so that companies can transition both into the system and live throughout the duration of the system, they are given allowances also. So they don't have to buy. So the impact on their bottom line isn't as important as if they had to buy all the allowances they needed to comply. So there are, at the front end, there are safeguards where they're given free allowances, but also in the back end, the Green Fund, we have provided for measures to help them stay competitive.
And one final, if I may?
Of course.
And so just seeing that Quebec's similar in size to Oregon, do you think without your alignment with California, you would be able to do this independently?
I think it's important to align with California, just as it's important to now. We've worked very hard to collaborate with Ontario, and we were very pleased when Ontario decided to join the Quebec-California system. I think going at it alone is more difficult. I think a type of system like that, there's strength in numbers. And like for now, like if you look at, especially for smaller economies like Quebec's or Oregon's, I think the key is to be part of a greater market because it gives you much more flexibility. So by now having Ontario join us, now you're talking about a system that covers over 60 million people. And there's much less, and we have Quebec and Ontario sharing a border, having complementary economies, just like the economies of Oregon and Quebec are the same, very diversified, timber, agriculture, high tech. There's a lot of similarities there. And so diversified economies like ours, which are smaller, working with California definitely has its advantages as well. Being linked to the seventh economy in the world and having the same system also brings a lot of advantages too. But being also with economies that are pretty much the same size, just like Ontario's, hopefully Oregon's, Washington State as well, is with what they're looking at right now, you can see that we could conceivably create a very interesting economic space that, on the one hand, fights climate change effectively with hard caps and reducing emissions, but also generating an economic generator that can be very interesting for everyone involved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for traveling all the way to join us here. The Economist magazine, so a few months ago, I think, suggested that the United States was doing pretty well in its carbon reduction efforts, primarily because of natural gas, and that, indeed, our emissions are falling below the 5 billion ton per year number. I think I have that right. And China, on the other hand, is at 10.3 billion tons a year and climbing. The magazine suggested that the 700 billion ton cap or level, the number over which cataclysm will occur, at least some people think, would be exceeded on the fly because of what China is doing. When the country of China failed to enter into any sort of a decent agreement with President Obama, one would wonder why we continue to struggle so mightily. The argument is, if we don't, China won't. I don't think I agree with that, but what do I know? My question to you is this. How do you address these facts and get your country, your province, forgive me because I'm not sure what the right word is, to engage in costly measures given this probability?
Well, I understand that for the world to effectively change the way we're doing things, major emitters like China will have to come on side. And I think what needs to be done on the first hand, I think we have to lead by example, actually, because we are feeling the impact. And I think we have to do something. And I think our citizens, anyways, I'll speak for Quebec, I think they want us to do something. And they require action. And I think it's true of most populations. And I think also the fact that the U.S. has showed leadership, and President Obama has been showing great leadership on this issue, and other states, Governor Jerry Brown, again, yesterday, establishing a 40% target for 2030 in emissions reductions, leading the way again. I think what we're looking at right now is North America, Europe, parts of South America, even Mexico, is looking at some sort of carbon market system. I mean, you're talking about a major oil producer. And China, while maybe not moving as fast or moving the same way the U.S. has moved or Quebec, Ontario, and BC have moved. The six largest cities in China have a cap and trade system in place, and it's working. And China has declared its intention to set up a cap and trade system for the entire country by January 1st, 2016. And I think right now the way to look at this is the economic way, because right now there's going to be a cost for China. And China's feeling it right now. There's a cost to not doing anything. If you look at the pollution in China, it's having a major impact on its on health. It's having an impact on its economy. And right now, they've become just these past few months, they've become the largest producer of solar cells in the world. They're transitioning their economy. So while I agree with you that China may not be moving as fast as other jurisdictions, you're clearly seeing China moving in this direction. And I think that the argument that says, well, smaller, like a province like Quebec, we are responsible for 11% of Canada's total emissions. And our emissions account from less than, I think, a tenth of a percent of the world's emissions. So why are we doing all this? Because we have to act. Because we can't just stay on the sidelines. And the fact that on the one hand we're leading the way, but we're changing the way Canada is looking at climate change. We have a federal government that isn't moving. But now, like I said, with Ontario, with BC, you have 75% of Canadians now living under some sort of carbon pricing. So things are changing. And while Canada's emissions account for 2% of the world's emissions, we're still the ninth largest emitter in the world. There is something to be said about being an example. I think the U.S. is going along that way. California is doing it. Oregon, Washington are doing it in their way. They're moving along. The REGI states are doing it as well. There's another carbon market in the Northeast that is working. And so there is action that needs to happen. We need to fight this. And I think there is a worldwide movement happening. By the end of this year, you'll have probably 40% of the world's population will be living under some sort of carbon pricing system. So this is the way to go. So do we want to be on the sidelines of the economic benefits that will come out of this? I think no, because not only do we need to act now, because there is an emergency, 98% of all the science on this subject is clear that we must act before 2050. Not only do we need to do that, but also the ones that will act now will reap the benefits not only from an environmental standpoint for their population, but from an economic standpoint as well.
Follow up. So it'd be interesting to know how much money in dollars is being spent on research and development without regard to the nature of it as a result of your country's activities. Could you just give us 1 year's budget of R&D efforts on this?
So specifically on, I would say, I can give you the number on academic research. We've invested just in the last year over $5 million just in academic research projects last year. And it's going to be the same amount this year as well. Now, for indirect research, I would call it, I don't have that specific figure, but we could get it to you. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Bearden, did you?
I did. A couple of other questions. We could probably talk all evening, but
and I do think the minister has a
please
go ahead.
I'd love to continue talking. This is very interesting.
Some feel for the size of the organization required to manage this system. How much did government grow, basically?
Government itself didn't grow very much. Honestly, I mean, WCI Inc., which is an independent entity, it's a non-governmental organization, administers the carbon market. So government itself did not grow as a result of setting up the system. And in terms of personnel dedicated specifically at the Ministry of the Environment, you're talking about a team of less than 10 people that manage the whole climate change portfolio. So that goes beyond just the carbon market. So it's not a government growth program. It's actually, in terms of its cost to government, it's performing very well.
May I have one more?
Follow up.
Canada is so blessed with so many natural resources. You mentioned the hydropower and so forth. There's also a great deal of oil and gas being produced.
Right.
Are the producers paying into the Green Fund, or how do they fit into the system?
Well, Quebec itself, we don't have specific oil. We have very, very, very small oil production, and it's almost negligible. But oil distributors are submitted.
Okay.
So it's a different system. It's not, obviously, it's not 25,000 tons of emissions, but it's actually linked to the volume of their distribution. If they distribute more than a certain level, they are submitted to the system. But in terms of oil producers themselves, so you're talking about provinces like maybe Alberta or Saskatchewan, right. There is a carbon pricing system in Alberta that is in place. It's different than the traditional cap and trade, but it does exist. So there and what was very interesting, right now Alberta is in an election campaign, so we'll find out what the next government's attitude is towards carbon pricing. But what I can tell you is that the previous government was very, very open to having discussions with Ontario, Quebec, BC, and the rest of the provinces on this issue. Because I think there was an understanding that even the fossil fuel industry needs to work within the confines of some form of carbon pricing for it to be able to continue to develop. And that's linked maybe to the representative's question on China. There's going to be an economic cost to inaction. And so companies or governments that keep on going the same way they've been doing business before, they're going to get hit because other jurisdictions won't want to do business with them anymore. So there's going to be a competitive disadvantage of doing nothing. And I think governments like Alberta are recognizing that. And that's why the previous government's Minister of the Environment, I had very productive exchanges with him at the last COP in Lima last December. And they were very interested in seeing how they could collaborate because they see the economic disadvantage of an action and the economic opportunities of working within a system.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Minister, thank you for being with us. Can you give us a picture of the political environment just before the decision was made to team up with California? And can you, and relatedly, can probably before that, was it a legislative decision? Was it an executive? What type of mechanism was used to make the decision?
Well, the mechanism, it started through, it was executive. It was in the mid-2000s. Then Quebec Premier Jean Charest, who was a former federal environment minister in Canada, actually set out a very ambitious agenda to fight climate change. And part of that agenda was setting up a carbon market. And then so presented his strategy. And so you need strong leadership from the executive, and presented his climate action plan and the government's climate action plan, and went the legislative route. And so there were several statutes that were enacted to set up the mandatory reporting of emissions and to set up what ultimately became the carbon market system. So it started with leadership from the executive, but then which was almost simultaneously translated into legislative action. And so which created Quebec's carbon market and then the necessary regulatory tools to link with California.
Follow. And so the population, the citizens of Quebec, what would you gauge their reaction at the time? Absolutely supportive or cautious?
I think, quite honestly, I think it was something that in some regards came a bit under the radar. I mean, it didn't stir up a lot of passion at the time. It was something that was received very favorably. I think over the last 2 years, when it became real, you know, when there was an actual system in place, when there was actual money being raised, actual companies having to submit, having to buy credits, then there was a lot of attention on the market, especially when the fossil fuel distributors were submitted, and this was as of January 1st of this year. And so people saw the impact at the pump. So I would say the actual debate or the actual questions raised in the population took on a different perspective over the last 2 years, because previously it was just something that was coming, but it was still in the setting up stages. It took a very long time to get it done. There was a previous climate action plan, but it relied on taxes or royalties that weren't directly linked with emissions reductions. Now that we've set up the carbon market, now obviously it's taking on a much broader impact, and so we have to do a concerted effort to explain to the people what this money is for, what it's doing. We have to explain. We have to invest a lot in communication and education also about the impacts of climate change and what does it mean in the people's lives. So it's not about necessarily polar bears and ice caps. It's about your kids' respiratory ailments. It's about this flooding that you're going through every other year. It's about infrastructure costs It's about coastal erosion, about, you know, your house maybe disappearing in a few years because it's too close to the water, even though 20 years ago it looked like it was fine where it was. So that's now, you know, the fact that we have real drinking problem issues to deal with now. Mm-hmm. Where previously, even though we have 3% of the world's fresh water, this was never an issue. But now people are realizing it. So as a government, and also not just the, it's not just a government's job, it's a partnership with everybody that has a stake in this, which means all of us, coming together and explaining why we're doing this, and also the economic benefits of doing this, and the fact that it is creating jobs. The fact that it is creating high-paying, better jobs, that it's creating new industries. And so we can celebrate successes as well as showing real, tangible results in lowering our emissions. So it's an ongoing process.
Thank you.
I have one question for you before we let you go. This has been so interesting, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think we could probably continue to ask you questions all evening. I wanted to talk a little bit, because I know a little about what happened in California in terms of equity issues when the cap and trade program has been in place, and how you know, there are funds and ways to compensate for that for people who are lower income, who are impacted. Wanted to know if you could go into some details about the experience that you had in Quebec.
Well, in Quebec, what we have quite an extensive social net already in place. The thinking behind the fund, using the funds that are generated by the carbon market, the thinking was to use it specifically for economic development, whereas other jurisdictions have used, just like California, has used some of the revenues specifically to target certain social programs, and which is fine. But from our perspective, Quebec already has a pretty extensive social net for the least fortunate in our society. And so what we really need, especially in the last few years where we've had, and I'm sure we all understand this here in Oregon, everywhere, we've had a very hard time economically, especially for governments trying to raise and find revenue while costs keep rising. So we, with the money coming from the Green Fund, decided that this would be one of three major pillars of our economic development strategy to get out of this slump that we've been in collectively for a while now. And so we decided rather to really invest in economic development. Like I said, I won't repeat what I described earlier, but we think that it helps us because we need to generate revenues from a stronger economy that will allow us to fund those social programs that we already have. That's the real issue. We need to generate a stronger economy to pay for helping out the least fortunate in our society.
Any other questions? Thank you so much. I think you've given us a lot of food for thought, a lot of information on how this is impacting an economy that's of a similar size of Oregon, and the benefits of doing looking at things in a regional and subnational basis. So it's been amazingly it's been great to have you here, and so we really appreciate you again taking the time to come down here, and especially dealing with the back and forth of the schedule. It's not just been this committee; it's been kind of all day long as we've been trying to figure out lunch and everything. So I really appreciate that, Rafun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Minister Hertel and Elaine and Joelle, thank you very much for making the trip up to Oregon. I know you had to leave very early this morning, and it's part of a very busy week. So, you know what the Russians say is, you get all the sleep you need when you die.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you so much, you. Both of you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege, and we hope to continue working together on this very important issue. But thank you. It was a thrill to be here and to exchange with you.
That's great. Thank you so much. And with that, I'm going to close the informational session and close the, unless anyone has anything else. I did want to make a one note about the schedule. We will not be meeting next Thursday. Just, we don't have that much business, so we're not going to meet next Thursday. So enjoy that. And with that, I'm going to close the House Energy and Environment Committee meeting.